ever have a gut feeling? One of mine is to share a lot of information regarding the importance of our intestinal or gut environment. It is literally the key to our health. We continue today with Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride, author of Gut and Psychology Syndrome. Her urology and neurology practice gave way many years ago to human nutrition when her first son was diagnosed at age 3 with autism, and neither science nor medicine had any answers for her. Today, he is 19 and a perfectly functioning young adult. Natasha's GAPS, GAPS diet, is providing huge relief to many people. Autism is one debilitating condition of many that can be helped with some common sense and a little education. And Dr. Natasha has already done our homework. So stay tuned. This is Tributaries. I'm Robin Clare.
And of course, fermented foods are teeming with beneficial lactobacilli, because that's what ferments the food for you. The beneficial bacteria, probiotic bacteria, from the group of lactobacilli and yeasts, beneficial yeasts. So people with every mouthful of fermented foods, they've consumed large amounts of probiotic microbes. So they kept boosting their gut flora and kept feeding it and kept keeping it up to date. In the last few decades, as our food industry has blossomed, it changed all our cooking practices and generally has driven women out of the kitchen. So women forgot about all the traditional recipes, and we are not eating fermented foods anymore. So we, in effect, are depriving ourselves of a very important part of our human physiology, which we have adapted to for millennia, possibly longer.
Yes. What would you say is a basic first step for people? Obviously, we can all start eating some fermented foods. Let's talk about what needs to go out of the diet. I know oils are just horrific mm-hmm. with the large usage of the omega-6 vegetable oils, for instance. They can create quite a havoc in the body, can't they?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing that has to go are all processed foods. Mother Nature took billions of years to design human body. And at the same time, in parallel, it was designing all the foods appropriate for our human body to sustain itself. So we are supposed to be eating natural foods which were created by Mother Nature, not the foods that were created in the laboratories by our scientists tinkering, usually motivated by greed, by greedy companies. So processed foods are not appropriate for human physiology. They do not feed us. They do not detoxify us. They do not do any good in the body. They only pollute us, make us toxic, and make us ill. In fact, they are the cornerstone of all degenerative disease in our modern world. So all processed foods have to be out. That means all the foods that our food industry pumps on us, because they have to process natural foods in order to increase their profits and increase the shelf life, because natural foods don't keep very long. So we remove all those foods, and that includes the vegetable oils. Vegetable oils in those great big bottles and cooking oils are one of the most toxic things you can put into your mouth. No family should ever buy it, ever have it in their house, ever use them for cooking or for any other purposes, and never buy processed foods, because they're all full, they're all cooked with these vegetable oils. They're inappropriate for human physiology. Their fatty acid composition is completely inappropriate. The appropriate fats for human physiology are animal fats. These are the fats that humankind thrived on for millennia. Pork fat, goose fat, duck fat, lamb fat, beef fat, butter, ghee. Because the fatty acid composition of these animal fats is very close to the fatty acid composition of the fat in our own bodies. And not only the fat, but all the tissues that use the fat for structure and for building themselves. And if you look at the fatty acid composition of human breast milk, that is the best food for a human baby, and not only for the baby. If you look at the Greek legends and Roman legends and other ancient stories, Breast milk was considered to be a panacea for any disease. If you had an adult who was dying from some disease, if a breastfeeding mother could have been found, she could revive that person with her breast milk, because it is the best food for a human being. It's literally an elemental formula for a human being. The fatty acid composition of the human breast milk is very similar to the fatty acid composition of lamb fat and beef fat and goose fat and duck fat and other animal fats. These are the fats that are most appropriate for human physiology that we need to eat on a daily basis. So 99% of all your fat consumption should be these animal fats for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner. We live in a fat-phobic society, and these ideas are created by commercial powers who are profiting on producing vegetable oils. Animal fats have nothing to do with heart disease or cancer or any other diseases. In fact, they prevent them. They're essential for our bodies not to get diabetes, not to get heart disease, not to get cancer, not to get all these other degenerative conditions. The fats which cause these conditions, they're not only associated with them, they're actually causative. Are these vegetable and cooking oils and margarines and spreadable butter and shortenings and other things made out of these vegetable oils? That's been proven now by a mountain of research. Trouble is that scientists are an impoverished business. They haven't got much money to advertise their findings. Educating the population is a very expensive business. Scientists haven't got money for that kind of business. Who has got the money to educate the population on what the population should eat and what they shouldn't eat?
This would be a wonderful...
Food industry, of course.
Yes, well, that would be a wonderful situation and opportunity for the community to step in. You could get involved with the schools and the diets. And I even see city councils getting on this bandwagon. It would be so wonderful if this city could just start putting that information out, and as they have their town meetings, why not have a town meeting about the importance of diet and help everyone in their community just start thriving?
Well, that would be wonderful, but I don't think we can expect that, because governments are there to serve commercial powers, because the commercial powers lobby them all the time and fund them largely. That is why governments will always say to the population what they are told to say by the wealthy corporations.
Yes.
They serve the corporations first and foremost.
Natasha, let's talk a little bit about butter. I came from a family where my grandmother, it would seem, put a quarter pound of butter on her toast every morning. And when my first daughter was born, she would sneak into the refrigerator when she could barely walk and just want to start eating the stick of butter. And is butter actually better than milk, or is there any kind of difference there?
Butter is wonderful because butter provides a very beautiful fatty acid profile for the human brain and for the human immune system, for the bone marrow, and for all the other high-fat organs in the body. It is essential to eat butter on a daily basis. Unless there is a true allergy to dairy, butter is one of the best foods to eat, and you simply cannot overdose on it. You need to eat and eat it until your body tells you enough. And that will be, the body will tell you through your taste buds, through your desire for this kind of food. As long as you desire it, you continue eating it. There is only benefits in eating butter and cream and other high-fat dairy products. There are no downside to it at all. As long as it is a good quality, as long as they're made from a good quality organic milk, which comes from traditional natural breeds of cow, which are on organic pasture, on grass, all the time. Not from factory farming, not those poor, unfortunate genetically modified cows that sit in cages and never see the sunlight.
Yes.
No, no. You want breeds of cow which Mother Nature has designed, such as Jersey cows and Guernsey cows and Asian cows and African cows, which are on organic pasture 24 hours a day, most of the year, under the sunlight. If they're under the sunlight, then their milk will be very rich in vitamin D, the sunshine vitamin, and that's a very essential vitamin for us all to have. And the butter and the cream and the milk that they produce is beautiful and very good for us. And that kind of milk needs to be consumed raw.
Yes.
Unpasteurized.
We are lucky here. Not lucky. I mean, it seems like everyone should have this right, but we have co-ops here in Colorado where we can become a member of the co-op and get raw dairy. And there's always some kind of legislation we have to find our way through the loophole for, but so far so good. And it is incredible. It just, starting with the taste on down through all the nutritive properties, it's quite fabulous.
That's wonderful. You're very fortunate to have that resource. And
what is it like in England? Do you have co-ops like this, or...?
In England, the raw milk is available. It is allowed. There are some strange legislation and strange regulations that the farmers have to follow, and they're not allowed to advertise it, and they're not allowed to display it, and they're not allowed to sell it through shops. They're only allowed to sell it at the gate of the farm or on farmers' markets. So it's a bit of a secret society in Britain that consumes raw milk.
Yes, even so, it's a similar thing here.
But at least it is available, and that's wonderful.
Yes.
You see, milk of any animal, including human milk, is alive. It's in essence, it is the woman's white blood with the red blood cells removed. So it's full of alive and active immune cells, immune complexes, and enzymes, and active vitamins and minerals, and proteins and fats have got a certain structure which is activated to be used by the body immediately. When we pasteurize milk, we kill it. We kill all those active cells, immune cells, and we alter the structure of proteins and fats and carbohydrates. Enzymes are destroyed, vitamins are destroyed, and milk is also a probiotic food, so the probiotic bacteria get destroyed as well. As a result, the pasteurized milk is a major cause of allergies because the proteins have been all mutilated, and it's very difficult to digest for majority of people. And milk in supermarkets also comes from cows which are not natural breeds of cows. These cows were bred specifically in laboratories because they can produce 3 times more milk per day than a natural cow is able to produce. But that milk is a completely different product from the way Mother Nature intended the milk to be.
Yes.
These are Frankenstein cows. They produce Frankenstein milk, and that milk doesn't do any good to anyone.
Right. And then
so we need to focus on good quality raw milk.
Yes. In your book, The Gut and Psychology Syndrome, as you've mentioned, there is a lot of information regarding the GAPS diet. Now, you also have an introduction diet. How does this differ from the GAPS diet?
GAPS diet has 3 stages to it, the introduction diet, the full GAPS diet, and coming off the GAPS diet. The beauty of this diet is that you don't have to be on it forever. You can heal your gut. It takes different period of time in different people, depending on severity of the condition. On average, it takes a couple of years for different people. And then you can come off it. You can start eating, you can introduce foods which were not available on the diet eventually. Introduction diet is more restrictive, and it is structured in stages, but it has a better ability to heal and seal the gut lining quicker than the full GAPS diet can do. It is particularly valuable for people with very damaged gut wall, people with food allergies, people with autoimmune disease such as diabetes type 1, and multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis and celiac disease. They should follow the GAPS introduction diet. But you don't have to follow it at the start, at the beginning. If you're not well organized to cook yet, if you need to source your foods and reorganize your kitchen and perhaps reorganize your life, perhaps you're working a lot and you're traveling a lot, then you can start from full GAPS diet, which is easier to implement. The list of foods is wider there. There are more choices in there. Later on, when a fair amount of healing has happened in your body, because it will happen on the full GAPS diet as well, and possibly you have reorganized your work schedule and you have got organized with cooking and the kitchen and food supplies, perhaps then you will be ready to do the introduction diet as a deeper form of healing for yourself. Some people who are organized from the beginning can start from the introduction diet.
What kind of process was it for you in developing the GAPS diet? Is there something originally you thought was a very important part and then later on you realized it wasn't? Or is there something that you found, oh, I need to introduce this because of this reason? to help people really jump out of that symptom of not being healthy with a gut?
GAPS diet is based on specific carbohydrate diet, which was originally developed by Dr. Sidney Haas in New York. He was a pediatric gastroenterologist in the 1930s and 40s who worked with children with severe digestive disorders, children who were basically wasting away. They could not digest anything. And he has developed a specific carbohydrate diet which was curative for all of those conditions. He's written a book about his diet, and in the first couple of years he was hailed as a pioneer by his medical profession, by his own colleagues. But then new research came in, and new ideas came in, and new drugs came in, and the medical community generally abandoned the specific carbohydrate diet, pronounced it as obsolete and not necessary anymore. And it would have been forgotten if it wasn't for a lady called Elaine Gottschall, who brought her four-year-old daughter to Dr. Haas when he already retired, was in retirement. And her four-year-old daughter was dying from ulcerative colitis. The next step that the mainstream doctors were proposing was to remove all of her bowel surgically. And apart from the digestive disorder, she had learning disabilities as well, this child. So Elaine Gottschall found Dr. Haas. He gave his recommendations to her. And in a matter of months, her daughter recovered on this diet. It was such a miraculous recovery. She not only recovered from her digestive disorder, her learning problems have disappeared. And she led a normal life ever since then. Elaine Gottschall was so impressed that she devoted her life to researching the diet, putting it on a scientific basis. She's written a book called Breaking the Vicious Cycle, which saved the lives of many thousands of people around the world. She has a large body of following around the world. Elaine Gottschall has passed away, unfortunately, a few years ago now. But before then, we had a professional friendship. She has read my book, and she approved of it. And when I have adopted SCD in my own clinic, from patient to patient, I had to make some changes to adapt it to my patients, to adapt to my group of patients. And over time, the diet expanded and evolved, and my clients, my patients, have called it the GAPS diet. And that's how the diet appeared.
What, in all of your years now of doing this research, what has surprised you the most?
Surprised me?
Yes.
The most. The power of food on health. You know, many people don't realize just how important food is, that every mouthful, every speck of food you put in your mouth has a monumental effect on your whole metabolism, your whole homeostasis in your body. And many people don't realize it, and no more so than our mainstream medicine, unfortunately. Doctors still believe that what we eat has nothing to do with health. It is particularly surprising to see that in gastroenterologists. Even a small child will tell you that what I eat has an effect on my tummy. But gastroenterologists are in complete denial about food. So food is the most powerful thing you can do for your health. So whatever degenerative condition, whatever chronic disease you have, the first thing you have to change in your life is your diet. And then you will introduce so many wonderful changes into your body. You will find that many other modalities of treatment that you considered are not necessary anymore.
Yes. Natasha, what have you seen with Down syndrome babies using this diet? I'm sure it can only be magnificent for them.
Absolutely. I have many Down syndrome children in my clinic. Of course, they don't recover from Down syndrome. This is a genetic condition.
Yes.
But they become well. The pain goes, the inflammation goes, various other symptoms which make these children so uncomfortable go away. So they become well, and they become more able to learn and much, much easier to look after. So it is a delight for parents to see their child happy and smiling and enjoying himself rather than being in pain and miserable all the time.
Well, we're going to make a small jump here. I know the title of your second book, Put Your Heart in Your Mouth, What Really Is Heart Disease, is just really not very much of a move, is it? Because
the reason why I've written that book is because GAPS diet makes an emphasis on animal fats, and quite a fair amount of animal fats in every meal. Obviously, many patients were asking me the same question. What about heart disease? Because we live in a world where everybody's been misinformed that it's the animal fats that cause heart disease, your eggs and butter. So having explained to 100 patients that these foods have nothing to do with heart disease, I thought I better write a book about this. So I have researched the subject, and the result of that research is this book. The book explains where the idea comes from that fat and cholesterol cause heart disease. It is a false hypothesis. Any hypothesis is only a theory until it is proven. Hypothesis has to be proven. And now, since 1950s, when this idea was first proposed, hundreds and hundreds of studies have been conducted all over the world which have conclusively proven this hypothesis to be wrong, completely wrong. Trouble is that in that time, a huge political and commercial machine built up on this hypothesis. Food industry is making billions on it. Pharmaceutical industry is making billions on it. Government institutions and organizations have been set up which employ millions of people based on this hypothesis. So the more the science is coming up with evidence to show that the hypothesis is wrong, that dietary fat and cholesterol have nothing to do with heart disease, the more all these organizations resist, the more they put out their propaganda to the population, not to eat fat, not to eat cholesterol-rich foods, not to eat this and that and the other, and to take cholesterol-reducing medication. So it's a bit of a war going on, where science, as always, has no public voice. So the public doesn't hear and doesn't see what the real scientists are saying.
Yes,
all they hear and see what the commercial powers are saying.
Right. If you do take a step back and just start a little bit of an observation, you can see that the long-established dietary recommendations are what are creating the obesity and the diabetes. And the sad piece of it is, and yet I'm sure it's the piece that's going to start things really changing, is that it starts affecting, and it is affecting, younger and younger people all the time.
Absolutely. This should be the big clue. We have an epidemic of obesity and diabetes in children.
Yes.
And it's growing all the time. It's very sad.
Inflammation is a situation that happens because of this long-established dietary recommendation. Is that true? Is that a basic cause of what's going on with heart disease?
Yes. Well, what the scientists have discovered now, and it has been established as a fact, that the basis for development of heart disease and cancer and autoimmunity and many other and Alzheimer's disease and many other degenerative conditions in our modern world is inflammation, runaway, uncontrolled inflammation in the body. Now, why does the body have this inflammation? Because we all consume processed carbohydrates, things made out of flour, sugar, and other processed carbohydrates. Our breakfast cereals, our breads, our sandwiches, our pasta, our cakes, our biscuits, our crackers, our soft drinks that people drink all day long. What they do, they trigger a certain metabolic state in the body which initiates inflammation and does not allow it to subside. So these people are constantly in a pro-inflammatory state. And when the person is in that state, the stage is set for developing cancer and heart disease and diabetes and Alzheimer's disease and any other form of dementia and many other modern maladies.
Yes, and perhaps in just about closing here, I would love to reiterate the fact that the injury and inflammation in blood vessels is caused by low-fat diet.
Of course, absolutely. Human body is largely made out of protein and fat. These are the bricks and mortar that your bones are made from, and your muscles, and your heart, and your liver, every organ, your brain, every organ. And we have to keep providing these building blocks for the body to rejuvenate itself and to maintain itself. And if you're on a low-fat diet and low-protein diet, if you're avoiding meat and fat, you're not providing these building blocks. Your body is working on mediocre, second-grade building materials. So, of course, you cannot be healthy as a result.
Well, Natasha, is there another book on the horizon that you know you're going to be writing, or are you just...
Absolutely. I'm working on the Guttman's Physiology Syndrome book, which will cover all autoimmune conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis and multiple sclerosis and diabetes type 1 and celiac disease and other autoimmune conditions. The energy conditions, low energy conditions such as chronic fatigue syndrome and ME and fibromyalgia, various forms of arthritis and chronic cystitis and nephropathies and neuropathies and other physical conditions which stem from unhealthy gut. So I'm working on that book. And another book that I think will come out before then is called Gap Stories. I received many letters from people about their experiences and their success stories. And I'm just going to put all these stories as a book.
Wonderful.
We'll just do some grammar correction, minimal editing, and the stories will go just the way they are, to give people an example of what can be done with chronic conditions.
Well, these conditions are so chronic that people do need a lot of encouragement to be able to continue on the good path and make progress. So often they will start feeling a little better, and then they sit on this plateau for a long time, and any encouragement we can have to continue on to just break through and become more healthy and have more vital energy for living is going to be very much appreciated.
Absolutely.
This is certainly a subject that deserves a lot of attention and a lot of sharing. We can all learn a lot and live healthier lives as a result of this. Thank you so much to Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride, author of Gut and Psychology Syndrome, and also Put Your Heart in Your Mouth, What Really is Heart Disease? So much information in both of these books. For any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.